One of the key elements of a design process of most any product or even a system is to evaluate that design. Now, there's a whole lot of evaluation that goes on that's other than just the reliability aspects. But being aware of all of the aspects and all of the controls and steps that are involved will help us to insert our reliability-related reviews more efficiently. The evaluation process can have many different steps and can have many different tools or activities involved with it. What we'll cover here is just some of the higher level structure to a basic design evaluation and talk just briefly about how the reliability elements become involved. ISO 9001 outlines five steps, actually. The one that's missing is the change management element. So once the design is put under change control, it's basically finalized and approved, then any changes that occur to it have to go through a particular process with the appropriate checks and balances. But basically, a design process is figuring out what the plan is. What kind of scope are we going to have? What are the outcomes? What are the functions that we're desired to have? And at that point in the reliability realm, if you don't already have a reliability goal, it's time to refine it or develop it or refine it to make it available. And you obviously will need to insert the reliability elements into the planning stages. If there's any anticipated long-term testing, in the planning stage would be a good time to make sure the rest of the team's aware of it. But then there's a whole slew of design inputs, and these are the detailed specifications, requirements, regulatory elements, and on and on and on. And during the design process itself, we're going to be doing a range of different checks and evaluations and steps, control testing, prototype builds and testing, subsystem tests and building, supplier first article inspection, and that list gets quite long. Now, we can be involved with many of those activities, and it's really with that eye towards what will fail and when. But it's keeping an eye out for where the risks are and also for, are we meeting our reliability expectations or not? The design output is that final set of documents and design. It's the final, what we're going to go to production with. And so there's quite a few steps between the idea and concept stage, handing over to design and development, and then getting ready to build the operation step. And of course, in many organizations, these phases tend to overlap. So the operations team and the manufacturing teams may start working quite early in the design process itself. Now, there's a lot of different tools that are used in the design process. GD&T and geometric dimensions and tolerancing, I'm trying to remember the name of that, design for manufacturing, design for assembly. There's design for assembly. There's a tool I learned some years ago called Boothroyd Dewhurst, and it's a scoring process for the assembly process. And it, you get more points if it's top-down snap fit, no screws, no manipulations, no special jigs, those kinds of things. And the more exotic the assembly and the more difficult or specialized tools you need, then the fewer points you would get. And it's basically a way to compare different designs and encourage efficient to assemble designs. Design of experiments, we'll be covering that in a future lesson in some detail. But it's one of those tools that often associated with the manufacturing process and improving yield. But it certainly has a place in the design process, is because there's often many different variables that simultaneously and with interactions can influence the performance of a product. FMEA is one of the risk assessment tools, and it's appropriate to have in the design, and earlier the better. Then there's a bunch of computer-aided equipment, finite element analysis and modeling and simulation techniques. And more and more of the tools these days have many of these features built right into them. So tools like SolidWorks, for example, has some nice finite element analysis tools built right into it. Now, most of the time, these are used for the functional specifications or specifications of a design or a product. And designers will pull in the appropriate tools as they need to help them make decisions. Now, many of these same tools, though, can accommodate the aging of a system. So as things wear, or as where the stress concentrations are, or in a circuit simulation, how many cycles it goes through in a normal process, if that's important, and so on. But the basic reliability engineering is going to tap into every one of these tools and many others as we influence the design and encourage it to actually achieve its reliability objectives and help it to achieve those objectives. One of the key sets of documents is the requirements. And if you've ever worked in a design team, you know that there's, they call it scope creep, where late in the program, somebody comes in, usually a person of influence or from marketing or from senior management, requesting additional functions late in the program. Or even at the start, if they're gathering information from customers, we can get requirements that are pretty ambiguous and pretty difficult to interpret correctly. And sometimes they're even hard to measure. In a previous lesson, I used the example of a smartphone being comfortable. Well, that's an ambiguous type of requirement. But if we can convert that into something that we can connect directly to what customers mean by comfortable, then we can make it unambiguous and, more importantly, verifiable. Like, can we measure this? Now, sometimes we need to be very creative how we go about making measurements. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we need to think through for each requirement, including the reliability requirements. Is it clear? Is it complete? Is it consistent? And one example I've run into is looking through a product requirements document and looking for the reliability aspects. And they had a warranty period of time. They had a design life period of time. They had a failure rate over an unstated period of time. And all three of them were rather inconsistent. So and or incomplete. So just saying you want a five-year product doesn't come along with, well, what's the acceptable failure rate? How many can fail over 5 years? It's just, does it exist for 5 years? It doesn't really quantify how many should survive 5 years. But then it also didn't have clear pictures as to what the environment was, and transportation systems and packaging systems and installation process and on and on, all of which can either lead to failures or identify failures. And it's all part of setting a proper set of requirements, especially for reliability. Now, we're going to talk about reliability goals and goal setting and stuff a bit more in different stages in the course. But remember that a full reliability statement or goal has four parts. What's the function, the environment, and the probability of success, along with that, the environment that it's going, or along with the duration, the period of time that it's going to operate. So if we state our goals and our requirements that way, we can meet all of these different requirements for requirements. Change management, mentioned that as the one of the elements that came out of the 9001, and many organizations already use some form of change management and formalize that. Now, there may be a period of time in the design process where every change that's made is at the discretion of the local designer. Generally, after it goes through a set of reviews and becomes the plan of record, is one way to phrase it, then the documents for the plans go under change management. And so that if I wanted to change, say, a capacitor on a circuit, it may involve some paperwork and an additional round of reviews in order to make that change. Now, obviously, it adds a burden to the team, but it also adds some clarity as to which version of the product are we working on today. And some call it a necessary evil, but it does help us keep the overall design process organized. And so unfortunately, there may be some paperwork, but that's the price we pay for having to make last minute changes. So in all of these, in the design process, what is the role of the reliability professional? In too many respects, it is to enable the rest of the organization to make good decisions. So that involves much of what we've already talked about, which includes getting the right information at the right place at the right time and making that easy for people to understand. So our role hasn't really changed. Here we're talking about a design process, but we have a very similar role with all parts of the life cycle. In the next section, we'll take a look at systems engineering and integration.